Good morning. I call to order this meeting of the Customer Service Operations and Safety Committee on this December 4th, 2008. We have the agenda before us. Is there any, are there any changes in the agenda? Okay, then the agenda is approved without objection. Is there a motion to approve the minutes as if read? Been moved. Is there a second?
Can I make a suggestion?
Second.
Well, let's get the second. Mr. Benjamin?
Yes. On just two minor changes, one on action item A, a sentence before the last one. Mr. Giancola. Adoption of the Metro Access Plan. We just add for planning purposes only in there. That would be misinterpreted since then.
Is there objection to that addition here? None.
Okay. And information items, item B, the last sentence. I'm not sure I understand what it says, so if somebody can fix it so it says something, that'd be good.
Mr. Zimmerman, are you interested in your meeting?
Exactly what
the
question is. Don't understand the sentence.
I don't understand the sentence.
I don't have it.
Oh, I think that it doesn't specify what report we're talking about.
Okay. As I understood, the direction was to buy the report that comes from the safety department to the board to the goals that the board has.
Okay, that would be good.
Maybe it's the agency safety goal that should be specified there.
Whatever it is, it just didn't read like, it didn't make sense out of the words.
The point I made, I believe, Mr. Chairman, was that we get a thing showing these numbers, but we don't have anything with reference to the goal that was set for the year.
No. Okay, hearing none.
Without objection, then the minutes are approved. We proceed now to the action item that we have, which is an authorization. Oh, no, excuse me. We have the operational performance reports first. Mr. Francis.
Thank you, Mr. Graham. Good morning. Good morning, members of the committee.
Let me, before you do that, I did omit something. I do recognize the presence of a quorum for this committee meeting. Thank you.
All right. I think we may have technical difficulties, so we'll.
No PowerPoint?
Well, I don't know if it's functioning
might be
right
the
now.
First time. 38 years.
I believe you do have the document.
Yeah, in front of you.
Not be able to do this without PowerPoint.
I know.
We're paralyzed.
I'm going to do my best. Bus on-time performance for the month of October is 72-73%, slightly down about a percentage point from last month, but still within the high range. And some of the service issues that were related to that was wheelchair lifts and door operations. We had increased repairs on those, and some of that was due to normal operations and road work streets that the buses had to go down. We mentioned before, too, in the committee that 14% of our revenue miles were operated by our older fleet, and which came out to about 23% of the service interruptions occurred with that particular fleet. Also, one other thing, too, we had a system pick at the end of the month in September. When we have those system picks, operators who have new routes are making adjustments to those routes. So we'll see better improvement next month. The rail on-time performance was at 94%. Per Mr. Giacola's request, we added at the bottom all the lines so you can see the on-time performance on all. You notice that the blue and the green line with 91%. I'll talk a little bit more about that in the next couple of slides. But they had to do with both brake and interlocking and signal issues on both those lines. Okay, should be page 10, rail car door malfunctions. It you can see for the month, 1.7% of the trains that operated during the month of October experienced a door malfunction. You see 1.3 was a reference to no offloads, and the 4% was resulted in offloads. And the next slide references the non-peak percentage of trains that operated. You see 1.5 of the trains that operated during the month of October experienced door problems during the non-peak time. And once again, it's 1.2 for the offloads and 3.4 resulted in offloads. Now going back and referencing the blue and, the blue and the green line, as you can see on page 12, the major incidents affecting rail performance, we did have an increase in the ATC automatic control operations, and some of that was due to signal interlocking problems that we had on those lines. Brake malfunctions went up a little bit, and that was attributable to the same the vehicles having problems on those two lines as well. Next slide. Escalator and elevator availability for the month of October was 91.3%. The elevator was 96.8%. The next slide. The top 12 escalators with the lowest availability. The top one was Foggy Bottom. Escalator number 3 has been out now for over 1,400 hours. And as you can go down to top 12, DuPont Circle, and so forth. We do have a plan for the escalators at Foggy Bottom, and hopefully we'll have all those back in service in a relatively short period of time. It's going to take at least about a couple of weeks to get all three of them, or at least two of the three back in service. The elevators, same you see, there's two at Vienna, number 4 and number 2. They've been out for over, well, you can see the top one for over 400 hours. The second one has been for about 395, and the repeaters are highlighted in blue, too. I failed to mention that on both the elevators and escalators, but working toward putting plans together to address all of those. And the last slide was Metro Access. On-time performance on Metro Access is 91.1%, and the late trips are still within goal. They're 1.7, and I will add that last time we reported Metro Access ridership was up about 16 or 17%, and now it's up to about 20%. That's the last slide is for the operation performance.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Zimmerman.
A couple of questions. First, if we could go to slide 7, page 7. On the bus on-time performance, is it possible, you have that data aggregated, but I presume you have it. Disaggregated, you could look at it by route, by time of day, that kind of thing.
We can do that.
Do you do such analysis?
Yes, we're doing analysis on those routes now.
I think that
we're doing it now. We're also working with our bus supervision, bus operations, our planning department to take a look at those routes and see exactly what type of performance they have and what adjustments we need to make with them.
Well, that's precisely why I'm interested. It seems to me there's a lot of potential, a lot to potentially be learned by looking at this data. And for instance, if you look at performance at different times, some of it may tell you, oh, performance is down when traffic is heaviest. That obviously won't be new. On the other hand, if you look across a bunch of routes and you see it off-peak times, boy, this one doesn't perform well. That might lead you to ask other questions about what's going on with that route. Similarly, even within the context of heavy traffic and how it might lead us to ask questions about the structure of certain routes, possible. I'm also interested in the interaction where you have a couple of different routes on the same line and how they perform. And one of the things we found in restructuring some of the past is that you've got a line and you've got different routes that go off at various points. Sometimes that's the source of problems. It looks really good to have a bus that goes here and one that goes here and all that, and you find find out that actually that winds up not picking up too many more people, but really screwing up the schedule, just as an example. Similarly, we seem to have a lot of trouble managing the headways, some of those frequent service, the 16 line being obviously the best. But you know, we watch it, doesn't seem to matter how we change the schedule. We run one detail. Mm-hmm. So again, just one on my way here. They come in pairs. So every time we adjust the schedule, the goal is to get them phased out, running absolutely, literally, bumper to bumper down the street. And I wonder whether, you know, that's not something that goes to the question specifically. So when you look at two routes, maybe you can find something out about headway management and the results of any such.
I was just going to add, Mr. Zimmerman, you're exactly right. One of the things that we're doing is looking at AM and PM peak periods, midday, late night service, to take a look exactly how our buses are operating and running. And one of the things with our recent bus reorganization is to get the supervisors more involved, our field supervisors more involved when they're out there looking at the buses and making sure that they are leaving the terminals on time and then spacing them, giving them the proper headway performance that they should have.
If that doesn't work, then we need to look at what else is going on. Mr. Chairman, I have questions on some other slides, but obviously I'll defer if there's questions. Well, there are other questions on the bus issue. Yes, Mr. McKay.
Does this percent include the express bus on time performance? Is that folded into the overall?
I believe so.
Okay, yes, it is. Similar to Chris's question, I'd like to see that for the express bus, because we have the same issues on the recs, and it's a 15-minute express bus that I waited 40 minutes on this morning.
Okay.
And bumper to bumper two arrived 40 minutes later. So there's something not right out there. I've been saying that repeatedly, and I'd like to see if that's included in this number. I'd like it to be pulled out so we can expressly at that route so that we can see what's going on out there.
Mr. Chairman, that is really an important point, because it's more, it'll be more important as we go forward, because with the direction that after taking bus service and the branding into a certain few major categories of service, I'm thinking of Metro Extra, which I think corresponds to kind of serve the, you know, what is a particular service here now is going to be more general concept. That division will become important as a category across the region, looking at how our, you know, if you have something that is branded as an express service, you need to know how that is performing, because it's a different set of issues than with something where only people only want a mile or two.
Will you separate? I'll have that separated.
Okay. Thank you.
I have a question on the next slide, on 8, on the mean distance between failures and bus. I note that if you look at this divided by fleet, and thank you for doing that, what I believe we see is that our CNG fleet continues to outperform the rest of the service as far as reliability by a significant amount. But what really jumps out beyond that is the continued poor performance of the hybrid fleet, which is almost twice as likely to break down, it would seem, as the CNG buses. And now we've had them in service for how long now?
These are the 50 hybrids that we've had.
Been greater than 2 years.
Yeah, probably. I think it's more about 2 years.
Right, but we've had some experience with them now. It's not that they're just brand new.
Well, one of the things that we mentioned in a couple of committee meetings, that we had a harness issue with the hybrids. It's a harness issue and a software issue that we were working with the manufacturer on. Manufacturer was Allison, so we're still going through that process. Maybe Milo can give you an update, but we're still going through that process.
And that's a large part of the number of breakdowns, that would be a significant portion of it.
That's the major part, the major problems that we're having with the hybrids. The main harness that goes to the hybrid drive had an issue, or has an issue, with moisture getting in. The manufacturer is working with us in replacing them and sealing them. So that is
significant. So this is not just that this particular run of buses has a door problem or a brake problem. It's actually related to the propulsion system itself.
It is.
I guess I'll remind folks, although except for Mr. Graham, I don't know who's been here long enough at this point, but we did have, I remember the gentleman from the Department of Energy when we discussed this some years ago, deciding which way to go. He made the point that this is really still a prototype. So it's not as proven a technology as I believe or CNG, and that's not the problems that you expect with something that's still being refined. And that should inform our decision choices over those times. on the elevators, and I think over the years, Mr. Graham has probably sliced this as many ways as you can, so maybe this has actually already been done, asked for, but I'm just curious about, when we look at these, there's a couple things we don't see here, although I know you see them in the more detailed reports, but you cited this on this summary list by station. It, of course, doesn't tell us, it tells us that we're having elevator problems there on some elevator at that station, right? It's not necessarily the same elevator.
Correct.
So there are a couple things that are particularly of interest here to me. You don't have to know it now, but bring it back to me. In Ballston, that's showing up on that list. And that's a place where we have three brand new elevators. On the other hand, we have an old elevator between the mezzanine and the platform. And there's where it's significant, because if the mezzanine platform elevator goes down, the station is out for that. Whereas, since we have four elevators to the surface, if one of those is down or two of those is down, it doesn't matter that much, because we have redundancy there. It's great. So it makes a big difference in a case like that. We're talking about, you know, which elevator are we talking about? Are we talking about new ones we're having problems with, or the old one that hadn't been replaced that there's only a problem with? Is it the one of the four on the surface? In which case, that's not a big deal either. On the other hand, at Courthouse, a station I know quite well, that elevator is not only having problems, but I don't know whether the others are similar. It'll be down a day, and then it'll be up the next day. It'll be down another day, and it'll be up the next day. As opposed to some other station, you might have an elevator out for several weeks. It's a big problem. You understand what I'm saying? The intermittency of it, which, you know, in a case like that, really makes me and a lot of other people wonder, what the heck is going on? That works sometimes and doesn't work other times. Anyway,
okay.
You know, obviously that isn't captured in this kind of summary table, so hopefully you know.
And then I'll make sure next committee meeting that I'll have that detail.
I'm not saying there's anything wrong with the way this is presented. I'm just saying those are questions behind this, and in those two cases, I'd like somebody to
okay.
let me know what's going on. If there's anything that shows up there that is useful that affects eight other stations in a comparable way, then people might be interested in that.
I'll get that information back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Albert and Mr. McKay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Francis, I find this information very useful, so thanks for preparing it. I have a question on the escalators. Doing the math here, and in some cases, for example, Foggy Bottom, the chart suggests that one particular elevator has been out for almost 1,500 hours, which is about 62, 63 days, if my math is correct. And you said on a couple of occasions that you have a plan to address the situation. What is the plan?
Right now at Foggy Bottom, the three entrance escalators.
It doesn't have to be Foggy Bottom alone. And what's the general plan to?
Okay. Yeah. First, let me. The data that you're looking at here, essentially, even on the escalators and the elevators, what ends up on this chart, because of the hours out of service, mostly is what's driving that, represents what we call major repairs. And they take a little while to do. The good news is every one of these elevators and escalators that you see here, with the exception of Smithsonian number 3, has been returned to service.
But in what period of time?
Pardon?
Is it a full day of outage, a couple of days of outage?
Well, no. When you do the math, the escalator number 1 at Foggy Bottom was out a little over 2 months, you know, but it's because of repairs. And, you know, this represents, for escalators, this represents about 2% of all of our escalators.
Right, but if I'm using Foggy Bottom, I really don't care about the other 98% of, I do care about the other 98% of the users generally, but not when I have to trudge up a few flights of stairs, particularly if I have accessibility and other issues. So in station, what's the plan that WMATA has in place to quickly fix outages, or perhaps put temporary fixes in place so folks are not inconvenienced for, as your own record suggests, 2 or 3 months at a time?
Well, with the exception of Foggy Bottom is an issue right now because there's only one entrance, there's only three escalators, and all three of them are problems. with the exception of Foggy Bottom, everything else is pretty minimal. The impact is pretty minimal because we have other escalators running.
Right, but by your own admission, Foggy Bottom is a problem. So how are you, what's your solution to the problems at Foggy Bottom?
At Foggy Bottom right now, there is one escalator running and two are out of service. One of them is being used as a walker in the down direction. The one that's running is running up. We're working to get the middle one back in service. And I expect that to be back in service within a week and a half. When that's done, we have two more weeks of work to do on number one, and that will be back in service. And then, because of the timing, because we're looking at close to a month here, number three will still be a walker, and I don't want to rip it apart because of the expected crowds at the inauguration. So we're going to leave two running, and number three is stairs for the inauguration, and then right after the inauguration is over, we'll start on number three.
Let me try to answer that, Ms. Albers. One of the things, first thing we have to do is assess what the problem is. And if it's a if it's a minor problem, it's something that we can take care of, then obviously that's something that we'll do relatively quick. If it's determined to be a major problem, and Dave knows more about what the major problem entails, but if it entails us getting parts, components to the escalators, it may take longer. So once we do the first assessment as to actually what stopped the escalator from working, then we can determine what our plan is for the repair part to get it back in service. If it's major, I'm assuming it could be if we got to send away for parts or manufacture the parts ourselves, then that can take whatever that length of time is, 2 or 3 weeks. If it's something that we can get to right away and what we consider minor, then obviously we're going to get that back in service as soon as possible. But it all is the key is the assessment of what actually stopped the escalator from operating.
Mr. Chair, if I could just ask a follow-up. I don't get it, really. I mean, and I'm not an engineer, I'll be the first, so thanks a lot for the explanation. But you guys operate a system that uses escalators on a regular basis. I guess my question is, there a more proactive strategy that you could put in place so that the delays are not this lengthy? Whatever business I'm in or any business that you're in, I'm pretty sure you take proactive strategies so that your business doesn't get affected because of things that will normally happen in the course of doing business. So if you know the escalators break down for a specific reason, there can only be X categories of reason. I mean, the system only can malfunction in a fixed number of ways. What is the strategy to kind of wrap your arms around that in a proactive way? Maybe it's you know, forward ordering parts, for example. Maybe it's training. I don't know what it is, but I do find it unacceptable that at Foggy Bottom, you guys raised a Foggy Bottom issue, I didn't, that there could be such significant outages and there doesn't seem to be a sense of urgency about the repairs.
Well, let me try to address this. We have an aggressive escalator program. One of the issues we've had long term and working on the over 530 escalators that we have in the system is that we do preventative maintenance. However, from a staffing and contractual contract standpoint, it takes a period of time to get through all 540. The issue becomes a resource issue. Of what resources to get to 93% will cost you X. To get to 97%, it will cost you X times two. I mean, just to get that different percentage working. So we have applied a resource that I think should keep our system within a reasonable operations. But sometimes with the inspections, we don't detect what the issues are. It could be a safety switch. It could be that, you know, the escalator was not aligned correctly, and it could be a motor that burns out. It is hundreds of different things that could happen. And I am frustrated, too, because I've asked the question. It seemed to me simplistic. that if you have a crew working on the escalator in the morning, why don't you have a crew working in the afternoon than the crew at night to get it done quicker? Where the problem is, the crew, the second crew, doesn't exactly know what the first crew is working on. It's like working on an automobile. You have the same mechanic working through it the entire time. And so it takes a little bit longer than I like. I will, again, sit down with Joel and Dave and try to think of other options, particularly like Foggy Bottom and those stations that have the long escalators, that even though you have walkers, I've seen seniors trying to navigate those, and it's very difficult for them. And I agree we need to have some way of responding quicker, and I think what we're bringing back is a whole list of what happens and what steps we take to prevent what happens, and then if A happens, what does it take to fix? I think then there might be a better understanding of what we're doing here. And so I would like to bring that back as a more comprehensive report to the board on escalators and what the issues are, what we're doing, what the staffing levels are, and what other options are out there.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, related to that, on the CIP rehab date where it says future, do we, I mean, I recognize these may be a ways off, but do we actually know what the date is? Because if we do, I think it would be particularly helpful to put it on this chart so that we know when the larger fix for some of these chronic problems might be. Are we talking a year or 10 years? I think it would be helpful for us to know that so that we can look at maybe how we prioritize some of the rehabs. And my second question is the date in service. Is that the date that that particular unit was first installed?
That was the date it was installed.
Okay. Franconia Springfield can't be right unless we installed a escalator 20 years before the station got
there. That's true.
So we need to correct that one at least. No wonder it's broken down.
You sit there for 20 years before it fell.
Overused it.
Further discussion? Further discussion? Well, thank you very much, Mr. Francis. I wanted to, and it's, I have to say that I've been remiss in doing this, but I wanted to actually add an information item, but let me just do it via question, and it can be dealt with as succinctly as you would like. But recognizing that the inauguration is, now just a little over a month away, I'd like to have a summary of the operations plan in terms of the 17th, the 18th, the 19th, and the 20th. And unfortunately, I'm not going to be here on the 18th of December, and that's the other reason I'm asking the question now. To get a sense of what the system is planning on doing. You may be aware, and the other element of this that prompts this is that, as you may know, the District of Columbia is going to extend the hours of alcohol service for the 17th, 18th, 19th, and 20th to 5 a.m. With round-the-clock restaurant service, round-the-clock ability to be open as an alcohol licensee, but service must stop at 5 a.m. And so that is a development, of course, of just Tuesday. And so I'm wondering what if any steps, Metro Ramada is willing to consider to align itself with the new restaurant, with the new alcohol establishment rules in the District of Columbia.
Well, first, let me say that we will do a comprehensive report for the board meeting. We'll mail it out to you before that meeting. And it is changing, because you are right. Some of the changes are still occurring, and we're getting requests of various hours of service. We will operate what I would think is safe and reasonable to operate. And let me tell you what I mean by that. Having 4 days consecutive of opening at 4 a.m. and closing at 2 or 3 might not be possible just because of the hours of operations and the hours that our operators will be working. There is a statutory limit and hours that they can work in a specified period of time. So we're going through that analysis right now. Metro will respond the best that we can, but I have to be honest, It is not possible to operate 24 hours a day. We didn't staff for that. We're not geared up for that every day. And the key is we have to make sure that the equipment, it can get the maintenance necessary, so we won't have major breakdowns in the 20th. Having said that, we met yesterday, 60 people, talking about the details of every detail, things I didn't even think of, many didn't think of, for the inauguration. And we're doing so, that degree of detail, weekly, and there are things going on every day. But I will put together a report, but it's a changing report, because the events are changing every day, of what we will do. We have had discussions with the Restaurant Association and the Downtown Business District concerning the services. We're discussing circulated type services for buses. So we're working on that as you're speaking. I'm speaking, rather, but I can get that. I will provide a report to you.
Okay. Does anybody else have a comment on this issue? Otherwise,
I'd like to just Mr. Benjamin.
Yeah, I do appreciate particularly one of the things you said, Mr. Cato, and that is that it is critical that we are able to do and provide time for preventive maintenance that minimizes the possibilities of breakdowns during peak usage times. I would strongly encourage you to look at what you need to do, because one breakdown in the system during a peak usage is extremely dangerous and can cause major, major disruptions to the entire system.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, let's go on then to our action item. The authorization for public hearing to discontinue Route N-22.
You want to make a motion, Mr.
You can make a motion, but Mr. Zimmerman.
I'm looking for district members.
I will move. I will move.
I have to second it.
You second it. All right.
Yeah. Any presentation?
We do need a presentation on this, okay. Because at least we need a question answered. Maybe with mindful that we have another committee meeting. Could you just briefly? Is there an interest in hearing? This is simply authorizing a hearing. I assume everybody's fine with that.
I trust you to hold on
here. I just want to get clear on the financial aspects of this, because we had a report initially that seems to have changed in terms of the amount of regional subsidy relating to the N-22. Can I just get a summary of that issue?
Mr. Chairman, if I can, there's... first of all, there's two pages in your presentation. One is I'm trying to find slide number. Slide 22 is now on the screen. Overall, if we were to have the hearing and you came back and you approved it and we eliminated it as of April 1, it would be a fiscal impact on FY09 and an annual impact. That's what's shown on the screen. We'd lose revenue because we no longer have the riders. We would save money, and it would be a subsidy savings. That is the regional impact in terms of both FY09 and an annual basis, a 12-month basis.
Now, the subsidy, let me just make sure I'm clear here. The four-year subsidy status is that $1.6 million is the total amount of the subsidy. Is that right?
For the regional service, that's correct.
And remind us again of what the regional breakdown is on that 1.6.
John, if you put up the other slide, it's in your package. It's on page 26. As he's finding it, it's now up there. The left-hand side of that breaks down the $1.6 million as to where the allocation for the regional services by jurisdiction. Also does it for the quarter for this fiscal year.
So that what we have is a situation where the District of Columbia is presently paying just a little over $1.3 million of the total $1.6 million in subsidy. Is that right?
That's correct.
And so there is $300,000 which would be available then to the other jurisdictions. We would have to spend our share, of course, in terms of having this be a circulator route. But there would be $300,000 then theoretically, potentially, made available to the other jurisdictions.
It would reduce the subsidy requirement by the other jurisdictions.
And the amount of revenue associated with this is quite small.
$180,000 on an annual basis.
And the route that the district is proposing to replace this with is, it's the identical route?
No, the route that the district is proposing to replace it by is a slightly different route that came out of some efforts from your office and the circulator district that comes across from Foggy Bottom, across from the Woodley Park Zoo, and then comes down.
No, this is the N22.
Oh, I'm sorry.
This is the N22 route.
I'm sorry, I'm on the wrong route. I'm sorry.
But we appreciate you keeping us in mind.
You took a rail ride.
The new northern route is pretty exciting.
I'm sorry.
But we're not
getting ready
for that one right now. The N22 route provides service between Union Station and Navy Yard Station via Eastern Market and the Washington Navy Yard.
I apologize.
Yard. And the circulator route, I believe, is virtually identical.
I believe it's identical.
It is. Yeah.
So the District of Columbia is proposing to turn this into a circulator route to run. I think it's identical. I'm going to say identical.
It's identical.
I think it's identical. The District of Columbia is proposing to take the N22 route and make it a DC circulator route, relieving the suburban jurisdictions of $300,000 with the obligation.
Point well taken, Mr.
Relieving, should I repeat it again?
Yes, sir, I think just for emphasis.
I don't think I need to repeat it again. I think everyone heard it. All the smiles at this table tell you that they heard it. And do we have I have been given this number, but I'd like to hear it again. I do have a vote on this issue today. What is going to be the cost of operating this DC circulator route along the identical path as the current N22?
Are you asking me, Mr. Graham?
Well, I know.
So my staff suggested that there was a 5% increase for the new circulator route. I don't know what that number translates to.
Well, we've just been advised that it's $1.7 million. What did you say, $1.7? $1.7 million. Huh? It's going to be more expensive than, slightly more expensive, not greatly more expensive, slightly more expensive than what it costs Metro to run the identical route.
Mr. Chair, question.
Do you have a question, too?
I want to help you here a little bit. Is the service that your city is proposing to run on this route not just the same route, but are they running the same level of service? Or are they increasing the frequency of service? Are they running different kinds of buses?
Yes.
And so it's more service. So it's not really a comparable number to say you're proposing to pay a little more than you're paying now.
Well, we're also running it at a cheaper fare because the circulator. Now, in the context of a world economic collapse, I would like to put this off a month, if I may. I would like to put this off a month because I would like to have a full. This originally, and let me explain why. This originally was presented and then withdrawn because of numbers. And I would like to have the opportunity to have a separate briefing on this before we act, unless there's an objection.
We could do this. Do you want it?
I'd like
before
it to come back up in January. Okay.
We can do that, sir. It's up to you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sure that those of us in the other jurisdictions are happy to accommodate your desire to have or not have a hearing on this item. I would point out, though, that since you pointed out that doing this would save a few dollars for other jurisdictions, while we're getting ready to thank you for doing that, should you go ahead, that we might also want to count up, just for instance, the number of routes that Fairfax County has relieved the Metro system from doing and what that does to subsidy region-wide, and I guess Montgomery also, oh, and Prince George's and Alexandria, and in recent years even Arlington. I know this is a new thing for the District of Columbia, and I can understand, having done it, the reasons why it may be advantageous and why your administration is obviously interested in doing this kind of service. I think that on balance you probably would wind up saving money, but we're also looking at increasing the service. The dollars may differ. Obviously, that's a piece of budget matter, so I defer to you.
Thank you.
Mr. Graham, can I just technically answer your question to make sure that we can do this in January, but the request is to make the change effective April 1st. So if we authorize the hearing in January, we can still have it in February, get board approval before March, but we're cutting it close. So yes, we can do your request. I just kind of wanted to lay out the time frame.
Yeah, I was gone last week, had I been here last week, all of this would have happened. But I would just appreciate the opportunity to have
just
it.
Yeah.
Thank you all very much. So then, without objection, this matter is put off till January. We now proceed to the information items, Metro's transit police crime statistics. Chief Taborn.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, other members of the committee. Today, we again will present to you crime statistics and other significant facts that many of you have requested that the police department provide to you. Looking at the five-year span, we can see that this year, in the area of larcenies and in the areas of robberies, those numbers have exceeded 2007 numbers. But we also take into account that riderships from those years have also increased significantly. In the area of larcenies, most, if not all of those, are pertaining to larcenies from vehicles and those parking lot related crimes. And in the area of robberies, unfortunately, the juveniles with respect to robbery, snatching of iPods, things of that nature, have resulted in an increase in that number. So as far as the total for the year, we have exceeded the number for FY 2007, for calendar year 2007. Next slide. We also asked to rank crimes, Part 1 crimes, vehicle versus non-vehicles, to get a feel of what is actually happening. And in the District of Columbia, Gallery Place leads 42. We don't have parking lots. And you can see in Anacostia, non-vehicle crimes 33, and it goes on down the line. Next slide. In the case of Maryland, where we have a preponderance of parking lots and garages, New Carlton, vehicle-related crimes, 64, non-vehicle, which I might add does not necessarily mean crimes against persons, but it could include destruction of properties, other crimes that fall into the category of Part 1 crimes. Suitland, College Park, Lago Town Center, and it goes on down the list. Next slide, please. Next slide. Okay, so when we look at the probability of being a victim of a Part 1 crime, for every million customers, there's a probability of 2.74 per million customers. And statistically, in 2008, the Metro Transit Police received over 50,000 calls for service, made over approximately 1,500 arrests, issued over 5,000 citations, criminal and citations, and wrote over 2,400 fare evasion citations. We were also asked to look at the region and talk about crimes per year versus populations. This reflects the signatories and does not include the political subdivisions. So in the District of Columbia, these are crimes that were reported to the Washington Council of Governments by all of the agencies that you see here, including the Metro Transit Police. You'll see 35,000 for the District of Columbia in 2007, 68,000 for Maryland, 31,000 for Virginia, and Metro again, 1,475. So we also wanted to compare things that were like. So we looked at the population versus the daily ridership of Washington Metro. So in reality, when we look at the cumulative number of people over the course of the year for Metro ridership, we're looking at over 300 million people. So that's the statistical reflections of the crime in Metro in comparison to the jurisdictional areas that Metro serves.
I just wanted to thank you for breaking that down for us, and I had requested it because I think it gives a different picture sometimes than when we look at just the numbers, and those numbers need to be explained, but it does give a different in terms of what the metro is and when we hear some of them.
Thank you so very much.
Mr. Chairman?
Mayor, you?
Yes, again, thank you for the report. And I know we're focusing on this in my jurisdiction. I'm sure we're doing it in all jurisdictions. But with the downturn in the economy right now, are we seeing a significant increase, particularly in larceny and robbery categories? And if so, what kind of presence? What are we doing about it in terms of presence?
Well, in participating with the Police Chiefs Committee, most, if not all, of the types of crimes that we're experiencing relative to vehicles, whether it's stealing of GPS, stealing of the airbags, catalytic converters, things of that nature, are occurring in our parking lots. And with respect to robberies, all of the jurisdictions are also experiencing the types of crimes associated with juveniles and the stealing of electronic types of equipment, snatches, grabs, things of that nature. We're looking, in the case of the parking lot related crimes, at technology that can assist us in identifying those types of perpetrators. But we in Metro, we have so many parking spaces that it's sometimes difficult to adequately patrol the parking lots and arrest people, although we are working in a collaborative fashion with the local jurisdictions and our own auto theft enforcement units to make a concerted effort to address those types of activities.
But your presence, I mean, our heavy increased presence, or is it just a standard?
It's an increased presence. It's an increased presence, but we also are cognizant of the fact that we want to be highly visible, and more often than not, our attempts to approach the crime problem in the parking lots requires to be in casual clothes, things of that nature. But we also employ a variety of WMATA employees to be the eyes and ears so they can assist the police department in identifying people of a suspicious nature. We also use our bicycles as well as our motorcycles to patrol the lots.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Thank you very much, Chief. And now we proceed to our safety. Oops, no, we don't either. We're proceeding to something different. Oh, yes, we are. Safety.
You're right.
We may be having technical difficulties again. Good morning. Our rail safety performance indicators for the first 4 months of this fiscal year, year to date, have been trending consistently downward, and the specific numbers for October are also trending in that fashion. Thanks to the good work of the folks in operations, for example, our number of fire and smoke incidents have decreased as a result of the trash retainers that they've instituted along the railway. Next slide, please. The bus safety performance indicators, once again, for the fiscal year, year to date, the first 4 months, we've had a 32% decrease in the number of bus passenger injuries, as well as the bus passenger injury rate has decreased by 40%. For the month of October, the number of injuries specifically are down 13, which is a percentage change of 68%. And the bus passenger injury rate is a difference of a reduction of 70%. As for Metro Access, the same trend is continuing in a positive fashion, a 17% decrease in the number of passenger injuries. The passenger injury rate is a reduction of 30%. As well as for the month of October, there's been a reduction of 55%, and the passenger injury rate for 30%. Are there any questions?
Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I just want to add one question to our earlier item.
I just remembered. Thank you. For the earlier item regarding the institution of Mr. Zimmern requesting that last month, that we next year look to add the goals to the next, to the GM's goals, the safety performance statistics. We are in the process of devising some language for the general manager and for the board to review as to how we could better align those two.
Thank you. And in addition to that point, you know, I was the chair of the hearing on the elimination of the Metro bus of the 98 line. And there was union concerns expressed at that time about when a Metro bus route is eliminated, what the impact will be on the Metro employees, Metro LaMotta employees, of that elimination. And this was noted for the record, and so I would like to have a response to that concern.
If I understand your point.
No, you don't have to give it now, but, okay. But just, I just want to, I promised that I would raise this, and then I forgot it, and now I'm remembering. Okay. And if you could give that response in January. Okay.
Just to make sure I understand the concern of what happens to them from
a
job
standpoint.
It's a potential
loss of jobs concern, which, you know, we didn't have an answer for right then, but I think there is an answer, and
yes, there is.
I'd like to have it. Okay. Thank you. Now we proceed to website. Is it Suzanne Peck?
Yes, it is.
I'm very pleased this morning to introduce Metro's new website, which will be available to our very first riders the morning of Monday, December 8th. And I would like to acknowledge in the back of the room Vic Grimes, who is the deputy for GIS and for web portals, and then Eleanor Evans, who is the program manager for web, for the very fine work that I'm going to present to you today. Our current web portal has been growing serially since 1996, so it is extremely rich in content and applications, but as with any site that's grown serially over a 12-year period, has some modest disorganization associated with it. Specifically, you can read some of the kinds of things that you would expect would happen to a site that's been growing over that period of time. No common look and feel, very text-heavy, duplicative. The new site is actually has fewer pages than the old site because we've taken out nearly 900 pages of duplicative information, and you can, as I say, see some of the other things that you would expect to happen naturally over time. And so our newly designed enterprise web portal, and this portal was a 2009 goal of the chairman to deliver in exactly this time frame, and is delivered at Joe.
Point of personal privilege?
Yes. I really do have to correct this. The FY09 goals are the goals of the board, adopted by the board by its vote. It's nice to associate me with them, but I'm merely the first among the board's
okay. As enunciated by the chairman. This design has all of the elements of something called Web 2.0. And 2.0 describes a post-2004 website styling that is best practice around the nation, not only for public enterprises, but for private enterprises as well. And it reflects new publishing tools, new navigation systems, new aesthetics, and the very best of websites now have this look and feel. And the look and feel is one of a very simple layout, one that has strong colors sparingly used, that has very descriptive icons, and has plenty of white space. And so in all of the improvements that you would expect in our first major upgrade in over a decade are there. There is common look and feel to every one of the over 6,000 pages in the site now. The content is prioritized. It is easily accessible. Riders are very focused. Riders care about their route, their line, themselves. And so everything in all of the web design and the web pages now lets you get to your route, to your line, without having to travel through anybody else's routes and lines. The aesthetics balance between content and graphics are improved. You can see improved color dimensions and very consistent search, as we've moved to the Google search engine. The benefits of the portal are really benefits to customers. This portal is extremely customer-focused. So the ease of access to rider services where you only care about your services are there. Very clean, easy to use design. Immediate incident information. If you look to the center of the design, that is actually a rotational feature. When you read it on Monday, when you browse on Monday, and I certainly invite you to browse extensively during the early days and give us your feedback, but that middle section is a rotational section that during calm and normal times has calm and normal information. It will on Monday have information about, for example, about the inauguration, and that will be the principal information that is there. But in times of incident or accident or crisis, all of that gets wiped out, and immediately, real time, all of the crisis information begins to go to our riders. So immediate incident and accident information. Much better access for disabled people. Fully Rehabilitation Act 508 body compliant, and we thank so much the E&D committee and Patrick Sheehan, the chair, for extensive work that they have done with us on ADA. Much easier to use PDAs now. Your PDA will now take these screens exactly as they are on your PC. It will appear on your PDA as well. And then the service implications are much better normal service, much more customer-focused normal service, and much quicker and more extensive emergency readiness information. I'll give you four quick examples of new features and extended features on the site. The advanced trip planner, and the two you on the home page, you will see if you flip back that a great deal of information, a great deal of the very informative homepage information is about the trip planner and is about status information, because overwhelmingly users are going after those two pieces of information. But we now have an advanced trip planner that tells you, not only gives you detailed instructions and examples of how to put in your information, how to put in your address information, gives quick access to interactive maps, and has, which you can't see when it's not real time, has drop-down menus that, again, make all of the data very easily accessible to you. The former site sometimes required as many as 11 layers, 11 sequential clicks, in order to get down to the information you needed. We have in no place more than three clicks, because after three clicks, users drop off. They won't go to find the information at more than three clicks. So we have the three-click rule. You get to the information very quickly. In terms of service status, we are now, again, in a very clean, very quick way in which users, riders, do not have to go through other lines to get to their line. You can now get rail and bus and elevator statuses for your own lines, and we're showing now a case where everything is working properly and on time, but as soon as something on the red line would go wrong on rail, there would be a screen that overlaid this that told you exactly what was wrong on that line, so you can go to your individual line. Same is true with bus and elevator. E-alerts are delivered immediately, so the disruption information on rail and bus and elevator escalators is available immediately. And there is a location, a sign-up location now, where you can sign up not only for those e-alerts, but also for Metro Access alerts, because we now have special alerts for Metro Access customers, apprising them of weather conditions and disruptions, elevator and escalator disruptions that they're particularly interested in. And again, this home page feature allows a very quick snapshot of Metro's entire operational status, all in one sweep of the eye. In terms of interactive mapping, we now have maps which are additional to the station manager's maps, which you are used to seeing. Station manager's maps are retained, but interactive maps are now available where, again, every rider can zoom in or pan out on his particular station, his particular activities, and when you do that, you get a display of all of the station information, all of the status information at that station, including your station information, everything about bike racks and parking and every other, where station entrances and exits are, to things like real next time, next train arrival information and alert information. This also allows you to search for shops and restaurants and businesses to download to your iPod, to find the nearest stations to the station that you're used to frequenting, and getting driving directions to stations. And again, very, very simple, easy to use interfaces, clean, clear, the information all in one place so you don't have to go searching around. And again, as I say, when you browse this and return your feedback to us at Contact Us, I'm very eager to hear what you think of these new features. In terms of, again, in terms of every rider being devoted to their own cause, the rail station information provides for every station. When you click onto any particular station, provides a snapshot of all of the information and amenities at the site, tells you the driving directions, the trip planner, what's nearby, train arrivals. And it also displays from that station, thank you, from that station, fares to, bless you, fares to every station, every of the other 86 stations from that stations. So if it's possible to go back to the homepage, and in conclusion, or you can just look at your own page three, the homepage, the strategy of the new system is what I call department store. When you go into a department store, you may not see every particular product that the department store sells, but you see every department within the department store. And on your newly designed homepage, there is no feature, there is no application that we have that is not visible on the homepage and only two clicks away from that homepage information, and that is not intuitive as to where that information lies. So, at the time the first passenger on Monday morning arrives to use this information, the information will be up and available to them, and we're very eager to see and sure we'll pretty immediately hear what the reaction of the public is to this new site.
Jim? Are you finished?
I know how emotional website discussion can be. It rouses great passions in us all.
We'll rouse great passions in some. I can do that. This sounds like it has a lot of features that are very interesting that I've been looking for. Very exciting. The only way to know, really appreciate a web page is to use it. So, you know, you can talk about it, but really we have to get on it. That's also when you find out all the things that don't work so well, or that are confusing, or confusing only because they're different and you got to learn a new routine. And they may love it, they may hate it, they may hate certain aspects and love certain aspects, and probably it will be all of the above, and you'll hear all of those things. Because we've been through website changes. In view of that, how much input has the Riders Council had into this?
We were scheduled for the RAC on Wednesday evening. It was an extremely full schedule, and we did not make the time cutoff. We asked the RAC members to browse on Monday, to contact us, to get back with us, and we are on the agenda again for next month. The RAC has been meeting only once a month. The E&D
every month, but so there have been not even a presentation to them? There weren't any RAC Writers Council members involved at all, providing you input as you consider the ways to change the website?
Not from the time that we told them long ago that we were doing this as an activity, but where we have had extraordinary participation is on the E&D committee.
Well, hopefully you've hit a home run and everyone will love it. That'll be great. But I will say I think it is a mistake, Mr. Potato, not to take advantage of the fact that we have the Writers Council, that we have people there who, have.
We have for two successive months attempted to get to the RAC and the
I'm distinguishing two different things. One is making a presentation to a meeting which would be like this and not particularly useful for the same reason this isn't particularly useful. And drawing on them as a sounding board, we've used them in a lot of ways. For instance, Mr. Kubitschek consulted with them on changes for the interior of the rail car, about their opinions, and was able then when he made his presentation, to say, here's the input they got, here's things we're able to address. And they acknowledged that, certainly appreciated that, but it also meant he came into the thing knowing somewhat how some writers would react, because he got the benefit of that. And I think this is the kind of thing by its nature that even more so than a rail car. It's really all about that customer. And that's a ready group of customers. I'm not even saying that's the only way we should be doing that, to get input, but it's a good one because we have a bunch of people who volunteered to do it. So, if you just hit a home run, that would be wonderful. But it's almost never that way, right? This is release, 1.0, and you're going to have to make modifications because that's the way this works. So I'd suggest you think real hard about how you want to take advantage of that. So instead of having people that are simply saying, why did they do this stupid thing or that stupid thing, you'll have people who will understand and say, well, they did it this way because, but we're recommending they do this. You get much more of a dialogue and interaction, and I think that will help the product. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Wynn.
Let me just follow up on Mr. Zimmerman's line of questioning, and I have one other issue also. Could you describe how you have tested this?
We have tested every feature and multiple times in on a development site in a laboratory.
But you haven't done any customer tests or broader tests by people other than the people who are developing it?
That's correct.
Are you sure you want to go live without having done that?
The site is, yes.
It's normal practice, isn't it, to test with your target audience to some degree? Even if that were Metro employees who are not part of the development process?
If you would like us to do it, we can. I am very confident that the site is operationally ready.
And if I'd like to say it is a living site, so to speak. We understand we're going to get input, and as a result of that input, make modifications to it. But I know they're right. There's different ways different people have test sites, and this particular one, in order to get it out in the timeline that we committed to, we did not have the extensive test. But the test will be when it goes live. And I'm comfortable that it will work, and I'm comfortable we will probably get some input to make modifications to it, even if we would have done a test, a collective number of people.
Now, we did do, Vic just reminds me to remind you that we did internal testing with much greater than IT personnel. We used the communications group, and we used other internal Metro groups. And I absolutely concur with John's conversation when he says to you, we will be making changes very, very quickly. This isn't changes are going to stack up or observations are going to stack up. They're going to go very quickly.
Well, certainly, it looks attractive. It looks like the kind of thing that is going to work well. The whole issue of testing is one that I tend to feel fairly strongly about, and testing it with customers so that you, and that's really what Mr. Zimmerman was talking about, so that you have a sense as to how customers view this differently from the way we tend to view stuff, because they almost always do. So I wish you luck on Monday. And I hope that that the customers, when they use this as their primary interface with us, will find it as attractive as you do. Another question, you talked there about customers can find out about shops and businesses and the location of stations. Mm-hmm. Is that information we have, or are we connecting them with another website?
We're connecting them with Google information.
And is somebody else making money from that? Normally, when that happens, somebody is making money by this choice of who the businesses are that are displayed.
This is broadly available information from Google. Google is picking up whatever businesses are in that area.
All businesses.
It's just like the highway signs. The highways on the interstate highways, you get the closest businesses, and there's no way. If you're not close, you're not there, and if you're close, you're there.
So you're saying all businesses that are close will be on there?
Mm-hmm. Of types. Mm-hmm.
Yep. By type. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we aren't going to get a bunch of complaints from local business people saying, I can't find my business on.
Not unless they've already complained many times to Google for having it available extensively previously. There's nothing new to us.
I'm worried about the opposite. Is you know, I have my business right outside the station entrance, and it doesn't show up on your site.
No, it will show up.
Okay. Ms. Hutchins.
Follow up on that, and then other input piece. Now, clarity here is that the engine that's driving it is Google, and so you simply taken Google, and you know how Google got access to those businesses.
Those businesses?
Yes.
It's their business to get access to those businesses.
All right.
And they are making those exact, we don't have a business that everyone else who uses the Google search engine doesn't have. We use only what they make available to everybody.
I just think, Mr. some advantage for us. I Google too, possibly. I make it back. I just wanted to inquire about the input from the and to what extent was the testing and the input done onto site. How
now,
did
there
you
was
get
a,
that input?
There was a case to Mr. Zimmerman's observation where there was extensive testing of the E&D information by the E&D committee, both committee members and again, very extensively, the committee chair. So in terms of the font, the size of fonts, the contrast, that has all been extensively tested by the E&D committee.
Mr. McKay.
Just following up on some earlier comments, I think it would be useful to get a formal report back from you on revenue generation opportunities. You know, as jurisdictions, as part of our budget crisis that we're going through, we're looking at revenue generation in a lot of creative ways. And I think what we just heard is if there's an opportunity through listing of some of the businesses or other things to generate revenue for Metro, I think we need to look at the formality of how that might happen and whether or not that's even possible. Your example of the interstate signs is a good one, except for the fact that in Virginia, those businesses pay for that. They pay to have their logo on those signs. It's not just the closest ones. It's the closest ones that choose to pay. And so I think if there is an opportunity here to generate revenue in a way that makes sense, this may be an opportunity to do it. And I'd like to get a formal report back at a later date and explaining to us if that's even feasible from your standpoint.
Okay. What is the further questions? But what is the amount of revenue that we get from the advertising on the website?
The website?
It's pretty think it's relatively minimal, somewhere in the $20,000 a year range, and what we get is revenue from the Google ads that are not on the homepage, but that are in subsequent pages, so the number of clicks. But we can take a look at those agreements and get you that information. We can get that back to you, just a firm commitment on what that revenue looks like. But it's relatively minimal.
$20,000 a year?
Yep.
Does that strike anyone else as low? I mean, all right. Well, there you have it. Thank you very much.
One more question.
Mr. Simmons.
Quickly, I wanted to have this topic here. Where do things stand with the whole business with Google and Google Trends and Maps and all that, the thing that other cities have that we've been negotiating over?
Bose Transit Maps, we are in discussions with Google and have some TNC concerns and our terms and conditions concerns. And so are working through those terms and conditions.
I won't ask you to be specific on that, but I'd say that this is the same answer I think we got 3 months ago and 6 months ago and whatever else it was. And at some point here, we're going to want to understand why it is that it might not be appropriate for open session, but why we would have different set of legal concerns than, say, other transit agencies would have. And so, you know, at some point here, we have to know that we're either doing something, we're not doing something. It would be nice to get a definitive answer.
Can we bring that back with the information that we do on the revenue generating aspect?
And if there's legal matters that need to be discussed with the council, we'll be down there too.
Well, we thank you very much, Ms. Peck, for this great work and your staff and, you know, meeting one of our FY09 goals. Thank you very much. I think that concludes the agenda, if I'm not mistaken. I want to apprise the board that the questions that I had regarding the N22 have been in substantial part, not entirely, but in substantial part addressed and I think sufficient in a way to let us have our private briefing between now and the board meeting. And in my absence, if there are further issues, Mr. Albert will raise them at the board meeting itself. And so with that, having been the case, I will move to authorize the hearing on the discontinuation of the N22. Is there a second? It's been moved and seconded. Discussion. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. And that concludes this meeting of our committee. Thank you.
And if there's no objection, let's move directly into Finance Committee.